Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Howdy, Nick.
Hi, Angie.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. I was telling you before we started recording that last night I started watching Heartstopper on Netflix. And if anyone is not watching, first of all, I recommend reading the graphic novels first, if you can get your hands on them, because I think they're selling out pretty fast now that the Netflix show has started. But the show is so good. And it's so heartwarming, like obviously as a queer person, but also the way that they've translated the look of the show, like from the graphic novel, there's all these little like cartoony animation moments. And even just like the split screen, like the way they filmed it and edited it, it like feels like a graphic novel. So I just think they've done an amazing job. It's British, like I love everything British. So it's just fantastic. And also yeah. I'll mention for everybody listening that I am recording today without my normal blanket over my head that I normally use for sound quality, because I'm going to be sharing a little reading from a book and I just can't quite manage that under the blanket. So I apologize if the sound is a little more echoey than normal, but hopefully it will be okay. But how are you doing, Angie?
You know, I've been doing good. I listened to the episode that you did with Jonathan Coe on time and astrology, and that episode was so fun to listen to. I listened to it a couple times actually, because there were so much said in that episode that really I wanted to kind of like go back and be really present with what that was bringing up in me. And so anyway, and then you and I got to talking and you love the topic of time, and we've kind of touched on that a couple of times, like when you and I have talked on the show. But anyway, I really wanted to dig in there, and I think we kind of left off on this little thread that you pulled out at the very, or maybe like midway through the episode or towards the end, where you were talking about like colonial thought or worldview, and as it pertains to like divination and the way that people kind of look down on tarot as divination. Do you want to expound a little bit more on that?
Yeah, well, I was so grateful to Jonathan for that conversation. It just opened up a lot of different doorways for me. And yeah, one of those was kind of this idea that I definitely have always held in my own practice, as long as I've been reading, which is sort of a little bit of like a rejection of the idea of using tarot for divination. And I thought it would be interesting today, for us to like dive into why do we kind of say no to the idea of predicting the future, you know, fortune telling or divination, particularly myself as a white reader. And for any white readers who are, you know, listening, I do think that that is definitely tied into, you know, the colonial, patriarchal, and really Christian viewpoint, and the way that Christianity has, you know, kind of dominated and colonize the world, and kind of said, you know, this is a sin. It's a sin to predict the future, you know, and that's really a power grab, you know, honestly. So it's interesting to even think about divination from just a more fun viewpoint of like subverting that, you know, quite like just kind of subverting the powers that be. And also, as Jonathan said, like kind of fucking with time, you know, what does it mean to say that, you know, okay, in this moment right now, I'm going to pull some cards and we're going to be able to tell from these cards now what may, you know, what's going to happen in your future or what happened in your past, or, you know, it's just kind of, it's interesting. And I want to say that I recognize that there are some other complicated reasons from a, like an ethical standpoint of why, you know, we might want to question someone's ability to tell the future. But I also think it is interesting to just, you know, reframe and have a new way of thinking. I mean, I love a reframing, you know, so.
Yeah, you said the past, you know, giving, not predictions, but telling or speaking to the past. What about that made you think? Because we always think about like using the cards to predict the future, what's gonna happen. Do you wanna talk more about like speaking to the past?
So this is one of the things I was going to discuss, and I'll jump to that now. So another former podcast guest, Lee Clapp from Liminal Site, had kind of shared this thought that made me think differently about this idea of the past. She also was sharing that she has in the past been, sort of quote, extremely wary of predicting the future, end quote, in her own practice. And in this Instagram post that she made, she went on to say that, quote, tarot is not a human entity and does not perceive time the same way as us. That's why we work with it in the first place. Mm-hmm. And she says, consider that the past once was the future and the future will become the past. It hit me that as a tarot reader, I have been predicting the past of my clients, end quote. Mm-hmm. And I mean, first of all, I just thought that was a delightful nugget for my brain to chew on in general. But also, I do think that for me personally, I have tended to feel more comfortable with the idea that what can come up in the cards for people is, you know, can be their past. And I guess it's just because they can validate that, I guess, or it's like, it's my own, I guess, you know, sort of limited linear way of looking at time as far as being like, well, that actually happened, quote unquote, versus like the, you know, sort of thinking, well, the future hasn't actually happened yet. But, you know, today's conversation is all about kind of questioning all of that and the linearity of time in general. But, you know, I guess that's why I felt more comfortable with it. But I also, in another book I read recently called Technic and Magic, there was also a section that was kind of pointing to the same idea. And I was thinking about how as a child, you know, we think about what we want to be when we grow up, and we get really excited about the idea of being an adult, and we just want to like hurry up and, you know, move forward with the future. And then the older we get, we become nostalgic and we maybe have regrets and we maybe wonder about the road not taken. And so in those ways, like the past really is the future, you know, and the future is the past. I just think
a very sliding doors situation.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it just fun to think about that? I mean,
yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, and you kind of like entertained this a little bit on the episode with Jonathan, but also you were talking about this on the episode with the tarot diagnosis, I think, where you were talking about like the kind of implanting of ideas that happen, and maybe you don't take that path initially, but later on down the road you might like open that up and start to expand on that idea, even if it doesn't feel alive to you at the time, even if it's not like, you know, feeling really good in your body, then you can kind of start to open that up at a later time, you know?
Yes. I loved that. And I love how we're able to like now kind of weave together all these conversations or sort of like debrief about, you know, the interviews is interesting. I liked that. I like that when you give a reading that you're saying, okay, here are a few different stories that, you know, might unfold from this. Which one would you like to choose? It's like a choose your own adventure. And I like that idea too, of the future being a choose your own adventure. You know, because for any physics fans out there, I mean, I in no way claim to like understand physics, but I really enjoy reading about physics. I wish a math teacher had told me at some point in my life that if I would just learn the boring stuff one day, it would be so incredibly creative, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But if you believe in like multiple, you know, universes or like multiple realities, or even like quantum mechanics, you know, like this idea that maybe there are multiple futures that are that are all happening simultaneously right now, you know, and so I think that's interesting to think of that as being a way that you could, you know, play with divination in your practice by saying, These are possibilities. I mean, and that reminds me of the Dune idea that we talked about in the pop culture episode, you know, this planting of possibilities. It's not actually 100% predictive, but it's more like statistics or probability.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
it's like the
probability of the future, you know, and this is one more possible thing that might happen, you know, that might occur.
It just kind of makes me think like, you know, the idea of presence or the idea of reality or perceived reality. The way that time like kind of stretches or shrinks, you know? What does presence mean to you?
So in this book, The Order of Time by Carlo Rovelli, He talks about the fact that there really is no, you know, universal present moment. And I read this book at a time when I was still doing a lot more meditation. And obviously, being in the present is something that's talked about a lot in meditation and Eastern philosophy. And so I'm just going to read this page from the book, because it gave me a lot of thoughts about what the present moment is and how it might apply to like tarot reading or divination. So the chapter is called Now Means Nothing. And it says, what is happening now in a distant place? Imagine, for example, that your sister has gone to Proxima B, the recently discovered planet that orbits a star at approximately 4 light years distance from us. What is your sister doing now on Proxima B? The only correct answer is that the question makes no sense. It is like asking, what is here in Beijing when we are in Venice? It makes no sense, because if I use the word here in Venice, I'm referring to a place in Venice, not in Beijing. If you ask what your sister, who is in the room with you, is doing now, the answer is usually an easy one. You look at her and you can tell. If she's far away, you phone her and ask her what she's doing. But take care. If you look at your sister, you are receiving light that travels from her eyes to your eyes. The light takes time to reach you, let's say a few nanoseconds, a tiny fraction of a second. Therefore, you are not quite seeing what she's doing now, but what she was doing a few nanoseconds ago. And it just kind of made me realize that, like, when we, so like a lot of, you know, readers on the socials will do collective readings. And I used to do that too. I used to read for a gift shop in Astoria, New York. And every Sunday I would do these live readings. And, you know, the idea was that I would start, I would pull 3 cards and I would do like a reading for the collective. And then I would take listener viewer requests, you know. And I just started to think about this idea of like a collective reading, because there is no like true collective now, you know, collective moment, let alone in the universe, but also just on Earth, you know. And so, like, on top of just the actual science behind that and the fact that there really is no now, it also then I threaded in, you know, my own, you know, ideas around social and racial justice and, you know, my own inability to really understand anyone and everyone's situation, you know. And I just was like, I don't know that I should really be claiming to be able to read for the collective. I mean, what even is the collective? You know, there really isn't like a collective. I mean, I understand that we're all kind of here and we're all of the human race, but like the collective just started to feel a little bit dangerously homogenous, I guess, and overly simplified in a way.
Interesting.
I think there's a way to simultaneously honor the connection of, you know, that we're all alive and we're all here, while also honoring the individuality of all of us, and not kind of reducing it down, and also not claiming, speaking for myself, not claiming to have the ability to like add wisdom for every person who might ever watch or listen to this, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and that kind of brings me back to something that Jonathan said, which was, you know, if you know what doesn't resonate, that's just as important as what does resonate.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So even in that moment when somebody is, say, like joining you on your live, maybe they are automatically aware that whatever it is that's being said is not for them. And that's important too.
Yes, I really appreciated him adding that. And thank you for bringing that in, because that was really healing for me to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. It's like the readings that pop up on TikTok and say, if you've gotten the algorithm brought you here, this message is for you. I have a channeled message from Apollo, and I immediately swipe. So sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were some of the threads or ideas that you wanted to discuss today?
You were talking about Saturn and their relationship with Saturn, and it made me think about this scene in The Watchmen, which is a graphic novel, and there's a movie that was made after that. But if you've not read the graphic novel, it's great. But there's a character in the book called Dr. Manhattan, and he's kind of this like godlike figure. He is not human anymore. He was human, but he has this relationship with one of the characters in the book, and she gets really angry because he's kind of like everywhere and nowhere, right? He's seeing everything all at the same time. He's seeing all possibilities, all these like layered things happening all at the same time. So to him, it feels kind of like these small, very human things feel very insignificant to him, which is not the truth for her. For her, these are very important things and they matter a lot because they're affecting her right there in that moment. And to him, there is no present moment, right? They're all layering all at the same time. And ultimately it like, you know, it separates the relationship and whatnot. But later on in the novel, he takes himself out to kind of a distant planet. That's what rang for me when you were talking about Saturn. And he has this great moment where he's kind of like pulling things apart and he's creating this clock out of the planet that he's sitting on. And suddenly like all of these gears and clockwork emerges from the ground. And it's really cool because he's talking about, you know, I'm really tired of being trapped in these, tangled in their lives, in these really small things. Mm-hmm. And so it made me think about like, you know, reality and what we perceive as real. Like we were talking about astrology and how that feels really real for some people. And it led me to think about like other constructs, like race was another topic that came up in that episode. And I was like, you know, other people would say that that is not real and that's not within their grasp. Like they've never experienced it so for them, it's not real at all. Mm-hmm. And we could say that about anything that's outside of our experience, right? Like mental illness or illness, and any other number of things. So I was thinking about that and kind of like sitting in how at any given point we're experiencing things or not experiencing things and how, you know, kind of to your point, like what is the collective? Like we certainly are all like, you know, we're humans, we're experiencing similar things, but like each of us is experiencing our own particular lens and our own particular experiences that shape us individually. So anyway, it kind of got me to thinking about like how relating to the tarot, when we're looking for meaning, we kind of do that same thing that Dr. Manhattan does. He kind of takes himself out of the situation and shrinks everything down into something that makes sense to him. You know, it's like we're looking for things that we can distill down into like an archetype. And then we can dismantle that and take it apart and analyze whether that feels alive for us, what feels present, you know?
Yeah. Well, I love all of that. And I have a million thoughts that came up as you were saying all of that. And one thing is the way that tarot, we kind of take life and cut it up into small chunks in tarot, you know, like that the 78 cards each kind of represent different aspects. And of course, there's no way to encompass everything that life contains, but it's so we take these 78 kind of chunks and then we lay them on top of each other. And that's how we tell the story, you know, and like, and that's what's kind of interesting about tarot and why people love it so much is that there are sort of infinite ways that one can interpret what those layerings mean, you know? But that's just kind of interesting to think about it in that way. And then I was also thinking about, as you were talking, the way that, you know, time, the idea of even taking our lives and like colonizing them, basically, you know, like kind of saying this is an hour, you know, like this stretch of moments is an hour, and this is, you know, and this is a day, and this is a week, and this is what you should accomplish within a day and a week, and you know, and if you do this for too many days, that's bad, and if you do this for too many days, that's good, and you know, it's just yet another way that we kind of control and you know, colonize. And that was also making me think about something that I read recently. I can't remember where I read this, but it was questioning like, if we were to one day, you know, venture to other planets and colonize other places, do they have racism, you know, like, or would we bring racism with us, you know, like, and do they have time, you know, or would we bring that with us? Like how do other planets have time, or do they, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that too with like I have a friend of mine who's experienced a really terrible loss. And for her, time is just kind of gone out the window. Like It's been several months now, but for her, the feeling is still very alive. Like for her and her spouse, this loss has absolutely permeated everything. And, you know, you have to, at one point, go back to work, kind of like, well, this is an hour and you can have your grief, but like, not right here, not right now. And, how do you continue to move forward in this kind of like constructed, format for the day? It's kind of like made up for us, and for her, nothing matters right now. You know, it's hard to care about anything because this loss was so great for her. So she's at once experiencing kind of what Sylvia Plath describes in The Bell Jar, where she talks about feeling like the eye of a tornado, like time is passing by her and she feels very still, you know?
Yeah. And, right? And I definitely think, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced this too, but that sensation of like, you know, when you know, have you ever had a situation where like you had so much that you had to get done and you're like, there's no way I'm going to do this. And I only have an hour. And somehow, no matter how much there is to do, you get it done, you know? Yes. And then conversely, there'll be, you know, you'll be like, well, I only have to wait 30 minutes until this amazing thing happens. And that 30 minutes feels like it lasts 50 hours, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's so true. Yeah. That's so weird when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, time is completely bendy and stretchy and not what we think it is, I really, you know, believe. But this was one other thing I wanted to mention. So in Alice Sparkly Cat, who is an incredible astrologer, which a lot of these same concepts of race, which you mentioned earlier, you know, the construction of astrology and the construction of race, Ace talks about that in their book, Postcolonial Astrology, which I definitely recommend everybody read. And I, at least for me, I've had to reread it like 5 times to take everything in because there's just so much information in it, but it's an amazing book. But Ace also has a great blog on their website. And one of my favorite blog posts they've done was titled "Stop Using Yin Yang to Talk About Colonial Gender." And this one element that I want to pull out said, quote, "I know what people are saying when they say masculine or feminine energy. They're not talking about the social performance of gender, but about the feelings that these gender representations create in them. They're talking about their own reactions to gender. Yes. When we assume that our own emotional responses to gender are universal and use spiritually essentialist vocabulary to describe them, we're imposing our own reactions on others." And so, you know, the reason I'm mentioning this is because I don't know if you've observed this, but I feel like in the last month or so, there's been a kind of a uptick or like a resurgence of a lot of talk about divine feminine and divine masculine.
I have noticed a lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was kind of, you know, it wasn't sitting quite right with me as it never does. You know, I was still kind of unsure of how I felt. And then this idea of like divining being about literally that, about communing with the divine, which is what Jonathan was saying. You know, divination is a human right, that the ability to commune with the divine should be a human right. And so I was like, what if it isn't divine masculine, divine feminine, as in like a noun, but what if it was divining masculine and divining feminine as a verb, you know? So every time that you, and what if that's how you talked about it? Like, what if every time you entered into whatever this is, you were seeking it? It wasn't as if you were going to something that already exists, you know, but it was the action was the divining, you know, like the seeking. And that just like helped me open up in a different way. And I've not really heard people talk about it in quite that way. You know, a lot of times people do talk about it as like this energy and that we all have both of it, but that is the piece that's never set right, because I'm like, well, if we just all have both energies, then aren't we just us? I mean, I don't understand why there needs to be these two things, you know? And it definitely, if there are two things, then that is a binary and it is gendered, you know, but if we say like that we're divining feminine and divining masculine, then the energy, it's just then a question of whether, you know, you resonate or you don't resonate with what you find in that action of divining. And it might be different every single time you do it. Just like every single time you pull out a deck of tarot cards, you're going to divine something different, you know?
Yeah.
So that was very helpful for me.
I love that you use the word commune too, because I feel like I heard like in common with is what kind of came out for me, whereas like if you were to commune with something, people use that word a lot when they talk about like communing with God, for example. But if it was that you were really unlike that God, then you wouldn't be able to commune because you don't have anything in common, right? Like you would have to have that commonality.
Yeah, I just feel like a lot of times it gets framed as, you know, like for instance, if a healer is sort of saying like, I work with divine masculine, divine feminine, it sort of gets framed as like, I'm going to help you get in touch with this thing that kind of is, you know, and I'm going to help you like get to it. And to me, this framing feels more like we're just going to search and I don't really know what we're going to find or if we're going to find anything, you know, it's like, it's the seeking that matters, not the like destination, which we know, you know, we know, I mean, so many people teach that and talk about that. We know that as a concept, and yet it can be, I think, really hard for our human minds to really deal with that. You know, the fact that there kind of is no destination. It really is just the journey, you know?
Yes. Yes. I love that. And there we go back on, you know, the trail of time and like, what is real, what's alive for you and what's present at any given moment.
Yeah. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
Oh, I know we could talk about forever. So I'll leave it here and just say this was a great conversation.
Yeah, it really was. And if you have any thoughts about time or anything we've talked about today, email us at isotpod@gmail.com. And Angie, thanks for being here again.
Thank you again, Nick. See ya.
Thank you for listening to In Search of Tarot. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_. That's BIRDGERHL_. And you can follow me, Nick, at In Search of Tarot. This podcast is independently recorded, edited, and produced by us, which means that we rely solely on the generous support of our Patreon backers to make this podcast happen. If you'd like to lend us your support, you can do so for as little as $2 a month over on patreon.com/insearchoftarot.